Hello and welcome to Alexander Disease Research Update, episode number 20, recorded on March 22, 2024. I'm Albie Messing from the Waisman Center at the University of Wisconsin, and with me today is Linghai Kong, also from the Waisman Center. Linghai, since this is your first time on the podcast, can you say a bit about your background and current position?
Sure. Thank you, Albie, for giving me this opportunity to speak on your podcast. So my name is Linghai Kong. I got my PhD in neurosciences from Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I studied neuropsychiatric disorders, specifically cocaine addiction and schizophrenia using rodent models at Dr. David Baker's lab. So afterwards, I moved to UW Madison to study neurodegenerative diseases using a human stem cell model with Dr. Suchang Zhang at Weizmann Center. And this is where I took on the Alexander project and use human stem cells to differentiate into astrocytes to dissect the fundamental function of GFAP.
Thank you. Before we get started, please send feedback and questions to amessing@wisc.edu. Today, our topic is a paper that just came out by Linghai and his colleagues entitled 3D Bioprinting of Human Neural Tissues with Functional Connectivity, published in the February 1st issue of the journal Cell Stem Cell. And this paper was primarily about a technique, a new method for studying the cells of the nervous system, but it also has a component on Alexander disease. So, Linghai, many of us are familiar with the term 3D printing as used with plastics or other materials to build objects of various types. But what does the term 3D bioprinting mean?
Normally, 3D printing that we general population knows about is the 3D printing of, you know, the material, non-living stuff. And to mimic the in vivo condition in the brain, you know, we know there's a 3D structure of complex cellular components, multiple types of cells, and they have certain arrangement and spatial organization. And using the 3D printing, we can put the mixture of cell types to mimic these structures in the human brain. So because these cells are alive, so there are a lot of technical issues we have to deal with that actually Yuan Wei, the first author of this paper, spent quite some time to develop the gel or what we call the extracellular matrix to bond these cells together and to create a in vivo-like 3D structure of tissue that made up of different cell types.
Which cell types did you include in your method?
So in this paper, we tried a few combinations to mimic like local circuits or long projectional circuits. So the more local circuit printed the neurons and astrocytes together. The neurons we incorporated, including the excitatory neurons and inhibitory neurons. And there are, in one of the experiments, we did the long projection printing, which mimic the connection between the two main brain regions, the cortex, the striatum. So these would be two different types of neurons printed together.
Linghai, how is this method significantly different from previous methods for culturing cells of the nervous system?
So I think Richo at the previous episodes talked about the 2D culture system and the 3D brain organoids that we use for studying the neurodegenerative disease. So this paper from our lab combined the advantage of both system, and specifically compared to the 2D cultures, which is the traditional system that we use, it is easy to operate. Many techniques have been developed to to experiment on cells culture this way. So say, for example, the live cell imaging, and we can easily to target this a thin layer, monolayer of cells. But for 3D organoids that has been recently developed, which has its advantage for mimicking the in vivo-like condition, but it faces many challenges. For example, because of the thickness of the tissue, that oftentimes, and it does not have the vascularization, which is another challenging part for the whole field. Because of this, the oxygen and the nutrients cannot penetrate well. And when the organoid grew bigger over time, that the it created some cell death because the inner cells could not get the oxygen and nutrients. So it created this necrosis core. So it has a lot of cell death issue. And another thing is that it's very difficult for you to apply many techniques that have been mature for 2D cell cultures. So our system using this 3D printing, similar to the 2D cultures, you can apply these techniques, you can do super resolution imaging easily, and you can do the intervention experiment easily. At the same time, it has this 3D structure, but because it's not very thick, the nutrients and oxygen could still reach every cells in this tissue. And in the paper, you may see that the survival rate is very good. And I think even compared to the 3D organelle, 3D organoids, it has more advantages that you can fine-tune or control the spatial organization of the different cell types, because inside the brain, there's, let's say in the cortex, there's a certain type of distribution of each cell type, and they follow a certain pattern and the layer structures. So using 3D printing, it's easy to achieve this structure organization, like in the in vivo brain.
Well, so a lot of effort clearly went into the development of this technique. But in the last part of the paper, you actually apply it to Alexander disease. So can you walk us through the steps of what was done there for the Alexander disease experiments?
The reason we use the Alexander model to test the functions is that it is a good readout for the to look at the local circuit neuron assets communication aspect of the biology. So to do this, we differentiated stem cells into neuronal progenitors and astrocytes progenitors, and then we mix these cell progenitors with the bio ink, the gel that Yuanwei developed, and then put these in the 3D printer, and then the nozzle will spill these cells out in a predefined spatial pattern, and then the neuron cells will be organized together. And then we found that using this method, the neuron and astrocytes still mature very well, and they maintain this spatial organization and the form connections. And actually, compared to standalone cultures, the presence of both neuron and astrocytes together seems to promote speed up each other's maturation process. And using this, we applied either Alexander patient iPSC derived astrocytes or the isogenic controls to look at if there's some kind of structural functional defects of the neurons and the astrocyte.
But we should point out that in this case, the neurons were derived from normal cells. So the neurons did not carry GFAP mutations.
That is correct. Yes.
Did the astrocytes form Rosenthal fibers?
So Rosenthal fibers, we cannot say because we didn't do the EM, but we did see the GFAP aggregates.
Okay. What else did you learn from these co-culture experiments?
First, the astrocytes aspect. The diseased astrocyte seems to have a defect in responding to neuronal signaling. So when we activated these neurons, the astrocytes normally will respond in neurons, and we can use the sensors to monitor the astrocytes response. For example, we use a calcium sensor, which is a GCAM, and we also use the glutamate sensor, which is iGlusiniFer in this experiment. Is that there seems that when we stimulate the neurons, the Alexander astrocyte response to neurons are weaker and irregular to the neuronal activity. There's also aspects of neuron affected by the Alexander astrocyte, which is that the neuronal maturation seems to be delayed or like effective in that it does not have as many synaptic formation.
That's really interesting because in our studies with the rat model of Alexander disease, Tracy Hagman put a lot of effort into studying neural development, and it seems that she may be seeing the same thing about an effect on synaptic development.
Yeah, that's good. These phenotypes align the from human cells and the rodent model.
So, what do you think is the key message then from this paper for patients and families?
Well, I think this paper provided a very good model for us to look at the interaction between the astrocytes and neurons and in the future with other cell types because that Alexander disease is a cell non-autonomous disease, which we know that it start from GFAP, which is inside the astrocytes, but the pathology is not limited in astrocytes. It actually affects all the other cell types, and the effect is actually very dramatic, as we can see in Tracy's the rat model you and Tracy developed, that microglia and neuron. And so this model with this 3D structure with 3D structure and multiple cell types, we can look at the cellular interaction. Potentially, we help us to identify certain modifiers that hopefully that FDA, there's some kind of FDA approved drugs that we could repurpose and target to maybe speed up potential therapeutics that for the patients.
As you mentioned, there are other cell types involved in the disease than just neurons and astrocytes. Do you think a next step could be adding oligodendrocytes to this 3D bioprinting protocol?
Oh yeah, that's a very good question. Yeah, I think next step we can say oligodendrocytes. Yes, since there's a demyelination issue, and since it's termed as leukodystrophy, there's a white matter issue, especially in the human. And I think probably we can. The first one is to put the three cell types together. Neuron, oligodendrocytes, astrocytes, so that to look at the contribution of astrocytes to the myelin formation and defects using Alexander astrocytes. And there's another major component is inflammation. I think the microglia, when I checked these rat tissue from the Alexander rats from Tracy, the microglia was the phenotype, but how to say it? It's very dramatic, and I think that's something that definitely one aspect we would like to see if the Alexander GFAP would affect some signaling between the astrocytes and the microglia, and in turn affected the neuronal survival or maturation.
Great. Well, it seems like there's a lot to be done in the future, so we look forward to that. That's all for today's episode of Alexander Disease Research Update. Please send questions and/or comments to my email address, amessing@wisc.edu. Thanks for listening, and thank you to Linghai for joining me today. Our theme song was written by Charlie Allinson, special technical assistance from my daughters Zoe and Rebecca, and from Clark Kellogg at the UW's Weizmann Center. And thanks to our donors for these podcasts, the Berent-Riddle family. I'm Albie Messing. See you next time.